Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Hey folks, Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank today, who is busy helping overthrow dictatorships across the Middle East. Just a reminder, it's been a while since I've guest hosted. I was served in 1st Special Forces Group, and I currently write for the website black5.net, and along with Frank, contribute to Andrew Breitbart's bigpiece.com. I wanted to talk today a little bit about the tremendous leadership shown by our president with the events unfolding in the Middle East. I think he has been out front as an exponent of liberty, as someone who has been telling the oppressed people that we've got their back, making sure, you know, that their governments don't slaughter them in the streets. I think that kind of leadership is what people expect from America. And I think that Barack Obama has, oh, wait a minute. He's been absent. He tried to vote present and he didn't even manage to get that done. I'm a little ashamed, to be perfectly honest. You know, it's one thing to say that we don't need to be the ones leading the way, invading countries, occupying them, you know, and making a huge military commitment. It's another to just sit on the sidelines and watch and wait and hope things turn out well. We have an obligation not just to the oppressed people, but to the American people to make sure that one of the most volatile regions on this planet doesn't explode. And it's pretty close. I don't know anyone a year ago who could have looked at the Middle East and expected this many countries to be in crisis. I mean, it was bad enough when we had to deal with Iran, the mullahs, Ahmadinejad, you know, and that entire debacle. Right now, is anybody talking about Iran? You know, the idea that an existential crisis like Iranian nuclear weapons now has faded into the background due to the fact that every other country in the Middle East is either in turmoil or helping its neighbors be in turmoil. I'm a little worried about it, and I think it's been kind of disgraceful, you know, that we, as the freest country, the beacon of liberty, you know, America, the place everyone looks to for leadership, and we've been absent. Our president has done nothing. It's a shame, and I think it's been kind of emblematic of his presidency as a whole. You know, the problem with our president is he's not a leader. He has never led anyone. He's never really even had a responsible job. He has managed throughout his entire career to basically coast. You know, he likes the positions. He doesn't seem to like the work. And he has run what could fairly be called and has been characterized as an imperial presidency. You know, he seems to like the trappings of office. He seems to like to have Motown concerts at the White House. You know, he likes to have ESPN come in and film him picking his NCAA tournament brackets. Seriously, Mr. President? That's what you want to do while the Middle East is on fire, while Japan's been destroyed? You're going to have ESPN come in and show you picking your NCAA. And here's the best part about that. All right. He picked his tournament choices and then his choices for the Final Four. Again, in a brilliant burst of leadership, President Obama picked the four number one seeds of the four regional tournaments. What a joke. You know, I think it's time right now for all the people who supported him. And there were a lot of folks who were right of center who drank the Kool-Aid. You could say Christopher Hitchens. You could add in, Christopher Buckley. And then the columnist, the House conservative for the New York Times is David Brooks. Now he's a decent human being, but he bought into the whole Obama cult. He decided that, you know, a little hope and change might be nice. Yeah, the guy's got no experience, never been an executive, never actually accomplished anything beyond writing two books about himself. And David seemed to be fully smitten with him just a few years ago. I mean, here's a quote from him. I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but when I talk to senators, they may know a policy area better than me. They generally don't know political philosophy better than me. I got the sense that he knew both better than me. Then this is the part I love. I remember distinctly an image of. We were sitting on his couches. I was looking at his pant leg and his perfectly creased pant. I'm thinking, A, he's going to be president, and B, he'll be a very good president. Hey, David, I don't want to bust your bubble, buddy, but you were wrong. Seriously, dude. I mean, that's as bad as Tingly Chris Matthews. Man's pant leg is not a good indicator of his executive leadership ability. I would look more to the fact as he had any executive leadership ability. Now, here's the fun part. These people are now scrambling to justify Obama's inaction. All right. And that's what it's been. He's done nothing. And here was David Brooks just this week. Says, today, most Americans seem to think their country is seriously off course. Yeah, no kidding, buddy. They may have less tolerance for a president who leads cautiously from the back. Oh, Mr. Brooks, I don't know how to tell you this, buddy, but if you're in the back, you're not leading cautiously or otherwise. Unbelievable. I mean, that's a serious chunk of attempted spin, and it failed miserably. Now, here's the funny thing. You know, I was writing at Black Five, and I mentioned that quote, and then I was thinking, you know, maybe Obama's busy. First of all, he's working on his reelection campaign. That's all. They really took a break from what he does well, which is campaigning, and ran a little bit of government, turned it over to Congress, ran through some huge changes and overreaches by the government, but now he's back to campaigning. But I figured he also might be working on his third book, you know, because, I mean, come on. It's been a while since his second one came out, and I was thinking of titles, you know, and I thought maybe Asleep at the Switch, you know, or Golfing While the World Burns. And then one of our readers at Black Five commented that the best title for his book was Present. And how are you going to argue with that? The man has voted present his entire career. He will not make a decision. He will not take a stand. And a perfect metaphor for Barack Obama's presidency is present. So there you go. My suggestion for his next book. But the problem is, you know, this would be a shame at any time. This isn't any time. This is a serious crisis around the world. The economy of the world crashed 2 years ago. Barely starting to recover from that, now we've got the most volatile region in the world likely to turn into some larger wars. There is civil war in Libya. We don't know what the outcome will be in Egypt. Saudi Arabia has sent folks, you know, across the border. I don't know how to put it any more clearly. Now is a time for leadership, and we are seriously lacking a leader. We have a beta male president, and unfortunately, we don't get to vote on that until 2012. And I really wish, you know, I wish there was someone leading the Republican pack that led me to believe they could take him down. I don't see it yet, but we're hopeful. You know, I mean, nobody saw Obama coming. Nobody could believe we would hire such a complete muppet. And yet we did. So I have faith that the American people can go ahead and rally behind someone who can change this. America is not a country that should be passively on the sidelines when trouble brews. You know, I mean, it's the simplest thing. When the world calls 911, the phone rings at the Pentagon. So why now is that just a simple message telling the world, oh, by the way, we're busy. You know, we got things going on at home, and we're not exceptional, and we don't do that anymore. Sorry, we have decided we are no longer involved in stopping countries from slaughtering their people, you know, helping oppressed people form democracies. Nah, that's just outside our lane. You know, we're more a multilateral, we're more, let's wait for the UN to act, let's see if we can get NATO into this. None of those people can actually do anything. None of those multinational organizations can do it. The UN doesn't have any troops. The UN is simply an administrative organization designed to steal money from all the governments in the world and allow the worst people on earth a platform to talk about the best people on earth. The UN could pretty much shut down and simply every week issue another We Hate Israel declaration, and they would have accomplished the same thing they were doing. You know, like, we don't need all those diplomats. They're not doing anything. And at this point, relying on them to make the world a better place is a sad and ultimately unsuccessful wish. So I don't know how to fix it. I wish, you know, I wish I could be positive about it. But at this point, I think we've got to really hope that the American people see that leadership is lacking. They see that the government should not be running everybody's lives, and hopefully will help us, you know, in the 2012 election, go ahead and make a huge change. At a minimum, the Republicans need to take the Senate back so we can make sure, you know, that President Obama can't do anything dumb if he gets a second term. But Seriously, people, we need to hope that we can get that man out of office and put some sort of actual leader in there. Okay, well, we've got some interesting stuff on the show. Frank has a segment he recorded with Victor Sparandeo, who is the author of a book called Trader Vic. He is an economics expert and a trading whiz in the Wall Street and international markets industry. And we will also have a couple of segments with my good friend David Bellavia, who is running for the open seat in New York 26th Congressional District. This is Jim Hansen, and this is Secure Freedom Radio.
First line of defense in the war of ideas, Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Michael Medved is asking Congress to simplify the corporate tax code for good reason.
This is a real problem. Of the 500 top Fortune companies, nearly 100 pay no taxes because they use various dodges
that have been written into the law by lobbyists.
And the President of the United States and Paul Ryan, the House Budget Chair,
and John Boehner, the Speaker of the House,
everybody ought to work together to get rid of this stuff.
It's just wrong.
The Michael Medved Show. Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are joined by Victor Sparandeo. He is the author of Trader Vic, Methods of a Wall Street Master, among other books. He is a Hall of Fame member of the Traders of America, that is to say, traders as in Wall Street. He is a man who has distinguished himself, as those particular credentials suggest, as deeply knowledgeable about the economics of America today and of the global economy, I'm sure, for that matter. And he has a very ominous message about the inevitability of hyperinflation. And we wanted to have him with us to talk a little bit about both that prognosis and, of course, what it might mean for not just our economic well-being, but also our national security. Victor, thank you very much for joining us. Good to have you with us here at Secure Freedom Radio.
Well, thank you, Frank. Pleasure to be here. let me just define, so there's a bit of misunderstanding about what hyperinflation is versus what I'll call moderate inflation or inflation from the 70s. Hyperinflation,
which was not terribly pretty, as
no,
I recall, either.
Nothing like hyperinflation. There have only been 30 occasions in history. The definition is an increase in the inflation benchmark in the U.S. It would be, say, CPI of 50% in
consumer
1 month. Consumer price index.
Price index, got it.
An increase of 50% in 1 month, non-annualized. Now, the U.S., by the way, has come close in the Civil War, but it was only up to 40. So there are many 20s and 10s and 15s, et cetera, but there are only 30 occasions of 50. Mm. The first one was the French Revolution. All others are after 1920. The second one was Germany, of course, when it couldn't pay its debts from World War One.
The wheelbarrows full of
the wheelbarrows. Well, the key is it's different than as I said, normal inflation, because what it is really based on a loss of confidence in the country in question who's issuing bonds to pay their bills. The U.S., for example, this year, it's going to spend $3.75 trillion-ish dollars, and it's going to borrow $1.65 trillion, roughly 46% of what it spends.
Assuming people will lend us that.
Assuming people, they have, and then that's the assumption. And when that doesn't happen, the country in question almost always prints the money if they have a printing press. They don't declare bankruptcy. The only countries declare bankruptcy when they owe the debt to another country, but not their own people. So 54% of our debt approximately owned by the U.S. citizens. Therefore, the U.S. is never going to declare bankruptcy. So what they will do, since they have a printing press, is print the money. But it comes from...
And have we seen some of this already, the printing of money by the Federal Reserve?
Yes, but
nothing like what you're talking about.
But nothing like, because again, it's a massive amount of printing, because no one will loan, or generally, no one will loan bonds, who's a bond buyer, will loan money to the country. A point of note, Bill Gross, who's renowned as probably one of the best bond people in the world, and certainly in the U.S., who runs PIMCO's Total Return Fund, among others, is just been noted to today in the press to have sold $28 billion of all U.S. treasuries. He owns no more.
Wow.
So he basically says, who's going to buy treasury debt after after the Fed completes the QE2 purchases? My point is this.
Remind us what QE2 stands for again.
Okay, it's quantitative easing,
right,
which is a surreptitious name for printing money.
Right.
It basically is what
in
it
the
is.
Aftermath of the effects of the stimulus and
QE1 was because of Lehman Brothers, but QE2 is just to help stimulate the economy because it was, in their words, anemic. But the real crisis here is you do not want to live through this scenario. No one would. It is by far the worst scenario. It really wipes out the rich and the poor, and the only people that make money are guys like me. The people that see this coming, they buy foreign currencies. Suggested would be the Aussie dollar, the Swiss franc, the Canadian dollar. They buy gold, they buy silver. Everything else loses. Commodities win. Okay, so you win by buying commodities, you win by buying gold, but you don't win by buying real estate, stocks. Bonds go to zero and they disappear forever. Cash disappears and there's a new currency.
Well, this sounds horrible, needless to say, for the rest of us. It's good for you, as you say, but not so good for everybody else. Is there at this point in our nation's history anything that we can do to mitigate this prospect? You say it's inevitable or unavoidable. Is there anything possibly that we can do?
Yes. And the answer is the inevitability is statistical if you don't change what's happening now. And it's a spending issue.
Okay.
If you can't spend and borrow 40% of what you're spending never to come back, and every single hyperinflation example, the other 30 in history, has had 40% or more, they had to borrow what they spend. So we've had this 3 years in a row. So we have to cut spending.
We've had what? I'm sorry. We've had 3 years in a row of hyperinflation already?
No. We've had 3 years in a row of borrowing more than 40% of expenditures.
Got it. Okay.
And that is what is universal in all the others.
Got it.
So we have to slow that spending. And it is really getting to the critical stage.
The tipping point.
It is getting to the tipping point.
Okay. And give us a sense of the magnitude of the cuts that are in order. We're hearing about, you know, $100 billion here, $100 billion there. Even that's proving to be very difficult on the Hill. What's really needed, and do you see any prospect that we're going to find this imperative addressed by the Congress in time?
Well, I don't think the Congress really understands, even, let's say, the most conservative congressmen don't understand the nature of how dangerous this is. I think the on the Democratic side, there's a bit of ideology here. They don't want to see it because they look at more control as more spending. But the issue is, when you can't cut $61 billion, or 1.6% of a $3.7 trillion budget, you see the nature of why this is inevitable. It's impossible not to be able to cut 1.6% of anything. I mean, anybody can cut 1.6% of something. So this has to occur. And if you wanted, where I think, you know, this is an opinion, this is not necessarily written in stone, but you have to get spending down to what revenues are. And that's roughly a 19% government take for the last 40 years. I mean, the Wall Street Journal has written extensively about the type of revenue that comes in, no matter what the tax rate. It's about 19%. The average is actually 17.9, but it's 18.19.
Give us a bogey here. What does it mean in, not percentage terms, but in actual budgetary terms? $100 billion is obviously not enough.
In budgetary terms, we have to spend 19% of GDP. We're spending this year 25%. For the rest of the decade, according to CBOE estimates, it's 23.5, according to the Obama.
Okay. Can you give me a number, not a percentage? What does it mean bringing us down to spend 19% of GDP?
Well, GDP now is going to be $15 trillion approximately next year. So let's make it simple for my math here. You have to take 20%. Of $15 trillion, and that's what you can spend, and you can't spend more than that.
Okay. My math is not as good as yours. You're a genius at this.
Well, I'm
20%, 20% of $15
trillion is three.
Is $3 trillion dollars have to be cut from the budget on an annual basis in order to get us away
from...
Well,
not cut. That's the amount you can spend. So we're right now at, say, $3.7 million. We have to bring that down in steps. I wouldn't say do it tomorrow, but you got to do it in stages to where you come down and your spending matches your revenue.
Okay. That's bringing the balance into budget.
Correct.
The budget
Correct.
Into balance, I should say. Eminently sensible policy, obviously very hard to do. We hope that your counsel is being heard on Capitol Hill. Victor Sparandeo, thank you very much for joining us from EAM Partners, where you are a general partner, and author of Trader Vic, Methods of a Wall Street Master. I hope you'll keep us apprised as this goes along. Thank you very much for joining us, Victor.
Thank you.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag, it's a pouch. And it's not sand, it's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes, I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now, but what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Hey folks, Jim Hansen back here sitting in for Frank today, who is busy infiltrating supplies to the rebels in Libya. I'm joined for this next segment with David Bellavia. Now, if you don't know who David is, first of all, I'm going to let you know he's a good friend of mine. We worked together on a number of issues around veteran support. But David wrote a book called House to House about his time during the Second Battle of Fallujah. It was really the most most serious combat and the biggest battle in the war on terror. He was nominated for the Medal of Honor for that. And as basically since then spent his time trying to make sure that we treat our veterans with respect and dignity. We run our national security in a way that makes sense for the guys who are still fighting. And now he is looking to take it one step further. I think some of you folks remember a little bit back when there was a certain congressman from New York who decided that shirtless pictures of himself on Craigslist might be a good idea. Well, they weren't a good idea, and so he ran home. That happens to be David's district, and he is now currently running for that seat. Welcome to the show, David. Good to talk to you.
Hey, thanks, Jim. As always, it's great to talk to you.
Well, hey, tell us a little bit about your campaign. Now, obviously, you know, this is a special election. I believe the election is sometime around Memorial Day.
Yeah, it's going to be in late May. It's kind of like for political junkies. This is about as quick a sprint as you're going to have. You know, you gotta get all your smear and your mud flinging out in 6 days. But again, you know, it's a really interesting campaign. There's four candidates right now. Three of them are worth a little bit over $100 million. I'm not one of those three, by the way. But at the same time, it's a really conservative district. It's a district that's had a lot of sacrifice. I might want to remind the audience that, this is a district that's about, 10 miles outside of where Brian Shawntosh, who's a Navy Cross recipient from the Marine Corps in Iraq, and about 10 miles in the south from where Jason Dunham, Medal of Honor recipient, lives. So there's a whole lot of Marines, and, a lot of veterans, and a lot of gun owners, and a lot of people who think like we do.
Well, that's good. Now, we should remind folks, this is New York 26 is the district. Let's just get it right out front. I'm not going to pretend to be interviewing you. I'm a partisan. I think you belong in Congress. You know, I think that it was brilliant, and obviously we both were thrilled to have Alan West win his battle. Now the idea of having both of you in Congress at the same time is in my mind almost the perfect storm. So what is the campaign website?
The campaign website is Bellavia for New York. So it's Bellavia, B-E-L-L-A, V as in Victor, I-A, Bellavia, 4, F-O-R-N-Y, .com.
Well, I would encourage, obviously I think the audience here for Secure Freedom Radio are definitely the kind of people who would be happy to have someone like David Bellavia in Congress fighting a good fight and basically trying to keep them from emasculating America. Is there going to be much in the way of issues beyond the economy? I mean, has there been much talk about anything other than jobs?
Well, in New York politics, the only thing people are really talking about right now is how much money everyone else has. There's been very little. I mean, I think I'm the only one out there that's actually talking about real issues. I mean, people like to think that, Libya and what's happening in the Middle East has nothing to do with us at home, but our gas is $3.85 a gallon, and if OPEC becomes another offshoot of Islamic extremism, you're looking at $15 a gallon. So all of this stuff trickles down to families at home. But no, all we're talking about now is how much money other people have and how little I have,
and how we can redistribute the wealth.
Right, we're gonna run on the Groucho Marx line of socialism.
Well, that's a version. If we got to run on a socialist platform, I would much prefer Groucho to Karl.
Groucho Marxism.
All right. Well, now let's talk about a few things. I think I think it's kind of self-evident to anyone with a conservative mindset that there are plenty of issues that affect us at home, but that aren't happening at home. And I think there's been a kind of a tendency, I think, with the Obama administration to withdraw from the world. He's basically taking himself out of play and us out of play. And I'm just curious of looking at the Middle East and the rest of that. You mentioned oil prices, could become a huge issue, given, we're at $4 gas. I saw just this last week. So I think, that being an issue, what would you be looking to do as far as a more robust foreign policy or national security for the U.S.?
Well, as far as the congressional race goes, people, jobs, jobs, jobs. But I think one of the things that you're really seeing, is that even though in 2008 and in 2010, the whole Republican drill baby drill thing really didn't catch over nationally. Matter of fact, it was almost a joke for McCain in 08. But in this district, there's a lot of sentiment towards using, we have, 200 years of reserve in our backyard. Well, when we talk about ANWR and we talk about Minnesota and Wisconsin and Wyoming and Montana, but we have natural gas right outside of Buffalo. There's other avenues of exploration that we haven't even gotten into. And, in New York State, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars for high-speed rail. But no one wants to just spend a quarter of that to look at, reducing what it would cost to, literally if we opened up these reserves all over the country and stopped talking about releasing our petroleum reserve. People act like that petroleum reserve is a money market account that you just transfer to your checking. I mean, if you cut federal tax on gas, if you cut the state tax on gas, and you literally tell OPEC, hey, guess what, buddy? In 8 years, we're going to have two times what you're giving us a day. I guarantee that price of oil is going to go down dramatically.
Hey, folks, we're here with David Bellavia. He is running for the open seat in the New York 26th District for U.S. Congress. And obviously, I wholly support that effort, and I hope you folks will, too. If you can donate, please do. If you just lend support in any way, spread the word. We would greatly appreciate it. Let me ask you now, back to, I guess, more a domestic view of things. One of the things that has been going on with Obama is has been a great expansion of the government's control over all our lives. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume you probably don't think the government should be running our lives.
Yeah, not exactly. You know, I mean, the only role the government should have in our lives is to protect us from harm. You know, I think there's a constitutional disconnect. You know, one of the first things I would do when elected, I know that sounds like a, you know, one of those cliches.
Well, say it like you mean it.
Truly, when elected, the first bill I'm gonna throw up there for to turn into a law is I believe that every single bill that is on the floor of Congress needs to have a reference to where it is legal in the Constitution of the United States. I think that if you're going to talk about any policy whatsoever and say that, you know, this is the bill that I want to be voted on and it is made legal by the 10th Amendment of the Constitution here, this is why it's legal, this is what I'm talking about, all of a sudden you now have a check. Imagine consulting the Constitution when we're making laws. But the fact of the matter is we have, you know, the 10th Amendment is really clear on what the powers of the government are. And I don't think, you know, James Madison and John Adams would have wanted a Van Jones running around the White House trying to turn, you know, red algae into fuel.
Well, you bring up a good point. Now, I think Boehner made that part of the rules for the House, but it's not enshrined in legislation yet. And I think that would be a good idea. And you could, at that point, avoid some of the things like we have right now with the Obama administration refusing to support, you know, the Defense of Marriage Act when it's under appeal in the courts. You know, they just decided, okay, well, we don't like this law. He hasn't even had the guts to say it's unconstitutional. He just said, I'm not going to support it. And if there was, you know, a piece that said this is why it's legal when it was made legislation, it's a lot harder for the president to walk away from that.
Yeah, and you know, it also goes beyond that, too. I mean, you know, we also need legislators in Washington that aren't afraid to play, you know, parlor games with the administration as far as, you know, how many bills you could pass in a day. If the Republican Congress kills cap and trade, he goes the back door. He goes through the EPA. If the House Republicans kill net neutrality, he goes through the FCC. So, I mean, you're going to have to eventually come up with as many ridiculous bills to counter, you know, what I consider to be these attacks on the Constitution.
Yeah, well, I guess what, David, I'd love to have you stay on for one more segment if we could, because I want to jump out of domestic politics and do talk some national security with you. So this is Jim Hansen here with David Bellavia on Secure Freedom Radio.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Songer.
Woohoo! Yeah! I had a feeling about this. Uh-huh! I'm rich! Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit card.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is there an epidemic in Washington? Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Real. What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, folks. Jim Hansen back with Secure Freedom Radio, and our guest is still David Bellavia. He is a former combat veteran of the Iraq War, Battle of Fallujah, author of my favorite book about the War on Terror, House to House, highly recommended. If you really want to know, I mean, I've cleared houses myself, and I'll tell you what, when David was writing about going into buildings, going upstairs, and doing those things, he brings you along for the ride. It's a tremendous book. Currently he is running for the seat, the open seat vacated by the shirtless wonder Christopher Lee, New York 26 in upstate New York. Welcome back, David. I'd like to jump now and let's talk about some national security issues. They may not be, you know, directly applicable to the race there, but I think they're applicable to all of us as Americans. The Middle East has blown up. You know, I am stunned. I don't think anyone could have expected this big an uprising across the entire Middle East. And I'm just curious what you think of the administration's reactions to that so far.
Well, I mean, if he wants to do a slow choke on Gaddafi, I don't know. What is this, like sloth wrestling? How long is that choke going to last? I mean, you know, he's got these open-ended commitments as far as, you know, all I've heard from the window's closed as far as I'm concerned with military intervention. If you had rebels that were actually still holding these cities, you could effectively use an air campaign to take out you know, the targets that you need to take out on the ground. And, oh, FYI, it's a probably good idea to kill that F-35 about now. That would actually really have been helpful to have, you know, sort of ground support that was stealth, but neither here nor there. A no-fly zone is an act of war, whether or not you want to admit it or not. I know Democrats, the only branch of service that Democrats love is the Air Force. But the truth of the matter is we're going to have men in harm's way. This is going to be a combat environment. People are going to die, and they're going to bleed, and we're going to spend more of billions and billions of dollars. And so to just kind of haphazardly think that we're just going to have a no-fly zone and everyone's going to go back into their corner is naive. But then again, I'm really kind of disappointed that Cameron and Sarkozy are now quarterbacking the free world.
Yeah.
I mean, we need a president to be the president. And, you know, I don't think the world is going to look at a superpower as, you know, if they stop coming to us with the authority of being a superpower. You know, our dollar, our economy, everything's devalued and been mocked. And now guess what? The one thing that makes us the biggest, you know, guy in the block is now being made fun of. So this is a tragic era in the history of our government.
You know, I've always said that when the world dials 911, the phone rings at the Pentagon. You know, and that's the truth. The problem is the phone just got disconnected on the side that does enforcement. And now all we've got is our EMT version going out. You know, I mean, we obviously are the world's disaster response team, you know, and we sent everybody we had to Japan. We're doing everything we can there. It's been one of our biggest humanitarian efforts to date. And I think it's always that way. But having lost, like you said, that moral authority as the world's policeman, you know, we are the world's policeman. If anyone is going to police, we're the only ones with the capability to do it. And I think that the idea of the no-fly zone was kind of a straw man. There were other options we could have had to influence events in Libya and other places.
Well, I mean, but you know, the other thing is that I think we're the only country that has the moral authority to do it as well. I mean, we've been pretty consistent, you know, in our stances. But look, you know, everyone wants to bemoan Bush and this idea that democracy would take hold in the Middle East. Well, you know what? You either have to say that it's not democracy. It's not the democratic movement that Bush kind of started with the Iraq, invasion. Or you give the guy credit where it's due, or you have to mature enough in the Obama administration to realize that we need a strategy for the long term. The lessons of Iraq, to me, are almost a perfect lock-and-step metaphor for what's happening in Libya. You know, if you ignore Libya, the Islamists will take that thing over in a heartbeat. I don't believe for one second that the rebels there are not Tunisian and from the rest of northern Africa.
Right, there's a lot of mercenaries, you know, on the ground.
And we ignored the violence at the end of the instability in Iraq, and what happened? The gap was filled. The vacuum was filled by Islamists. And I think that, you know, having occupying forces on the ground isn't always the answer. We don't have to put in 1,200 Marines, you know, into Tripoli. But at the same time, you know, it would be a really good idea to have the threat there, bring in some warships, let Iran know that, you know what, they could be next. You know, there's nothing will embolden the people of the Middle East more to throw out their tin horn dictators than a strong support from, you know, for the people of Libya right now. I think that's it's a really important moment. And again, you know, our leaders in the White House are tone deaf.
Hey, folks, we're here on Secure Freedom Radio with David Bellavia, who is running for the open seat in New York's 26th district. I wholeheartedly support his campaign, and as I mentioned in the last segment, I swear, just the idea of you and Alan West prowling the halls of Congress makes my heart flutter a little bit. So good luck to you on that. I think one of the things about the events in Libya was that there was a concerted effort to make it seem we could not affect them. You know, it was impossible to do a no-fly zone unless we invaded the country and killed all their air defense and did all these things. We could have dropped a few cruise missiles. I mean, we know where they park their planes. You know, they've only got four airfields. We've got perfect knowledge of every place that they use to run those planes, to run their attack helicopters out of. And a few cruise missiles blowing up might have reminded Gaddafi that, maybe we might not want him to slaughter his people. You know, and that little piece, if we'd have done that early on before he turned it into a civil war, we probably could have stopped that. And I think it's disgraceful that we didn't have, you know, the intestinal fortitude to go ahead and stand up for people trying to overthrow a dictator.
Now, you're absolutely right. You know, you were actually one of the first guys, you know, that I knew in my circle and on the internet that it was, you know, when Joe Biden was talking about we're going to win the war on terror with drones in Pakistan, the mindset was, you know, yeah, we could absolutely, you know, kill and capture, with these, I think you called it the ninja war or something.
The magic ninja plan.
Magic ninja plan. You know, but there is some truth to the fact that, you know, just the threat of having something happen, you know, death from above in Gaddafi. I mean, in 1986, you know, half of those bombs didn't even blow up on Gaddafi's house. You know, it was like dropping pianos on his home, and he got the message real quick. You know, people want to compare Mubarak and Gaddafi together. There's a huge difference. First of all, Gaddafi all but admitted that he had, you know, something to do with the Lockerbie-Scotland bombing. But look, you know, when the president comes out and it's leaked to London newspapers that he wants to funnel arms through Saudi Arabia, you know, when we now know that Syria is brazenly running sorties into Libya, they're using Syrian planes in Libya, there's no reason whatsoever why we can't, you know, make a joyful noise. Right now, a strong support in Libya will literally put in check a lot of these what I consider to be breakaway terrorist states.
Yeah, no,
and we're not
going to
do it. We're going to miss out on another shot like we did Iran.
Yeah, and I think that there's two sides to that. It's the mental game to stop the dictator from using the power he has, but also, as you mentioned, it's the support to the people who are trying to overthrow him. Just knowing that the U.S. has your back changes things completely.
You know, the last thing I ever want my president to talk about is the time he was bullied in high school. You know, when I heard that statement come out, I don't know if it's following up on the Scott Brown, you know, story of what happened to him. But, you know, the president's like, I was bullied in high school. You know what? You're the commander in chief. Let's just keep that story to your memoir at the end of your term.
He's getting bullied by Putin and other people right now. So it's
exactly.
Not like it stopped.
We cannot have a coward as our commander in chief. And of all the things that people wanted to talk about with what was happening in the world under George Bush, you know, he was accused of being a cowboy, but never a coward. So the Middle East understands, you know, force. They understand, you know, what it means to submit. That's what Islam literally translates to. We can't have someone that's schizophrenic and playing Hamlet about our foreign policy.
You know, unfortunately, David, I think you are absolutely correct. And I don't know that that's going to change. But the wonderful thing about America is we do have elections, and they're going to have one in upstate New York, District 26. David Bellavia is my candidate of choice, and I hope is the candidate of everyone here in the audience for Secure Freedom Radio. Thanks a lot for being on with us, David. I appreciate it. And Frank will be back tomorrow, I believe, when he's done helping the rebels in Libya attempt to overthrow Gaddafi. This is Jim Hansen signing off.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.